Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We are here with Emma's Revolution, two intrepid cultural workers with us at the studios of WBAI. Sandy O, Pat Humphreys, welcome.
Thank you so much.
We're glad to be here.
Well, you grace us.
We're fans. We love you. So.
Thank you so much.
Well, the only criticism is we need more CDs. We need more CDs.
You know, one of the bad tendencies that the progressive movement has is that they say, well, we've had a lot of speeches, and it's time to take a respite. We need a song. We need a cultural worker up there, as though somehow that is separate and apart and different than the actual message that you're trying to convey. It's just a momentary release. As cultural workers who do synthesize politics and the expression of song and sound, I was wondering how you understand your functions as political people, as political women, as songwriters and activists.
We're always having that conversation with organizers across the board to get people to recognize that the particular kind of cultural work that we do is a parallel sort of thing, and to get them to weight these things equally is a challenge. You know, we are all subject to the culture that we live in, and the culture that we live in treats music as entertainment. And even people within the various movements for social change will use that language with us, which is, it is not really appropriate. And that's not to say that the kind of work we do isn't entertaining. If it wasn't entertaining, people wouldn't come. You know? But we work really hard at making sure that we are following the issues, but that we're also doing it in an interesting way that does help to break up the speeches. And we're very conscious of who are we playing after, who are we playing before. Based on how that all comes together, we're mindful of what particular kind of song we're going to do.
And I think one other thing that is that the music going to come into people's minds and bodies in a different way than the spoken word of a speech is going to come into your ears and through your brain. We're sort of wanting to engage more of the body so that more of people can be involved in whatever struggle is going on. I mean, we need all of our energy, resourcefulness, and creativity, and not just our brains necessarily. So we need to kind of add in the whole body experience.
Your music, especially in these days, in some way gives me hope. In some way it uplifts me. Everything out there is so negative. But when I listen to a lot of music and when I listen to your music, I mean, this music was the way I think I got into politics. Mm-hmm. And there are times when I don't listen to too much music. And then I've recently started to listen to your music in the last year or two. And it's uplifting. It gives you some kind of hope. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it.
You know, it does that for us, too, which is why we're attracted to this medium. Since we're also in the culture, we're also inundated by all of the news. The network news is, you know, as well as the real news, because it's important to know what's being said to people. It's very easy for us to become overwhelmed by what's going on. So as a way for us to process the information and also keep our own sense of optimism and hope and ability to go on activated, we engage in it by way of our music. It's really what helps me survive through all of this.
I guess I feel a little differently about culture and music. For me, it's not about hope, because I don't find all your music hopeful.
it's
a form of activism. I don't like the categorization or kind of pulling it out, almost bifurcating it as though it's a separate and distinct part of the struggle. And that's what I find so enriching about what you do. It helps me communicate issues of the struggle. And that goes from, Pat, your own roots in part as a woman of indigenous descent, that's there and tells a particular kind of a story. The relationship with Sandy and the fact that here we are in the middle of Emma's Revolution. So I think we should find out, what is Emma's Revolution?
The quote that has been most sort of publicized and attributed to her. She didn't apparently say exactly those words.
Emma Goldman.
Of course, of Emma Goldman.
There are people out there who don't know where Emma Goldman is.
It's true. Absolutely.
And they certainly should.
And we actually wanted to get people to ask the question, who is Emma and why Emma's revolution? So she lived between 1869 and 1940, and she was a tremendous risk taker. And all of the things that we really value in people and in women in particular, she was a woman who would not be quiet about her views, and she would not be told how to express them. One of the things that happened to her, she was an anarchist, a feminist, an early labor organizer. She was a huge advocate for free speech, for a broadened definition of what was appropriate for women to do. The story goes that she was dancing at a party, and one of her colleagues chastised her for behavior unbecoming an activist of her stature or a woman of her stature. And she said, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. We think that's the great spirit in which to do this kind of work.
Now, how could we not stop talking for a moment and say, let's hear some of the wonderful material that you, Pat, and Sandy have put together from Emma's Revolution.
Okay. This we re-recorded, actually, for the duo CD. I recorded this first for my CD called Hands. So this is called Bound for Freedom. In Montgomery and in Selma and the streets of Birmingham, the people sent a message to the leaders of the land. We have fought and we have suffered, but we know the wrong from right. We are family, we are neighbors, we are black and we are white. Here I go, bound for freedom. In my truth, take the lead. Not the preacher, not the Congress, not the millionaire, but me. I will organize for justice. I will raise my voice in song. And our children will be free to leave the world and carry on. From a cell in Pennsylvania, from an inmate on death row, Mumia had the courage to expose the evil show. From the courtroom to the boardroom, in the television's glare, how the greetings of our poor and hungry people everywhere. Here I go, bound for freedom, in my truth, take the lead. Not the preacher, not the Congress,
Ken, you know, I've changed my mind. It inspires and it gives me hope.
No, I mean, it really does. It's
right
a whole different attitude that some speeches can do. It's true. I mean, if Martin were still here, but a good song.
Yes, it is.
There is the side of this music that makes me feel better, and it has to in order for me to keep doing it, because these issues are difficult, obviously, and they're overwhelming, but I have a really strong sense of responsibility. You know, the truth is, one of the reasons why this music does not make it to commercial radio here in the U.S. is because the corporate media and the government are well aware of the power of this kind of music. Each person that speaks out, each person that has the courage to push against all of the advice that you get from people about how to succeed in music and votes their conscience by singing what they believe is the right thing to sing, we're carrying a little bit of that revolution.
So there are other singers that you hearken back to in a way?
Well, there are so many remarkable people that distill or take what's going on around them politically and put it into some form of music or art. There's Norma Elena Gadea. I'm trying to remember actually now if she's Salvadoran or Nicaraguan, but I heard her music. And then we have heard so many different people's music. And I can't say that anyone has been, well, maybe next to Pete, been sort of the primary influence. But, you know, Mercedes Sosa and Sara Gonzalez, I got to meet her in Cuba when I went there with Pastors for Peace in 1995. And there's so many people that are speaking out in such powerful ways. And I really try to carry with me some of that. And the most direct influence that I've had here really in the U.S. has been probably Pete over the years. We just did a concert with Charlie King, though, I have to say. And through Pete, I learned about Charlie King's music when I was in high school. I didn't have a direction, really, necessarily. I just knew that I was going to play music. And I didn't even know if it was going to be a career. I just knew that I was going to play it one way or another. And those voices all sort of came to me at a time when I was beginning to define what direction my music was going to go. Holly Near, certainly, I heard when I was in college. Sometimes it was just being around incidents where people were intervening, you know, where there was injustice, and there was some kind of, you know, a racist comment, a homophobic comment or something.
You mentioned that because, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Charlie King and Pete Seeger. The other people you've mentioned are very strong, powerful women. Sosa is just, you know, just a strength.
Oh, she brings me to tears.
And you two are a strong women's presence, and that permeates the music. And for me, that's a very personal and important element as well. I just feel it from not just the content of the songs, but the presence that these are women that are striking out and asserting themselves still in a context in which there is so much misogynation.
Absolutely.
And there is so much bigotry and prejudice and inhibition to women proceeding and pursuing all that they could be, so to speak.
Right, absolutely. And we sort of experience that as independent musicians. We experience that on so many levels, not just on standing up and singing what we do, which often is, you know, shocking or strange to people who sort of don't expect women to have an opinion politically, perhaps, or to know anything about what they're singing about. I mean, all these kind of sexist ideas about women. And then as independent musicians, we do all of the work so that we can be musicians at these events. So, you know, we're just sort of encountering that on all sorts of levels. It's amazing in a way how far things have sort of gone back. And we're very well aware that as women musicians, we wear too much clothing, for instance. Like what's expected
That's
of
exactly
women
what
on
I
stage.
Had on my mind when you both walked in.
Yeah. What's expected of women on stage
is
that, you know?
It absolutely is.
It's hilarious. I mean, it's funny to talk about it that way, but it's also, it's very widespread. I was glad to see something just when we were leaving this afternoon that in fact, like Essence Magazine is having some campaign saying take back the music. Mm-hmm. And their point is that, and I think they were specifically talking about rap and hip hop, you know, that not only are the lyrics something that women are finding objectionable, but the videos about some of these songs are just very sexist, graphic, and not necessarily supportive of women. And it's not to say that we don't enjoy that music, and we do, but I don't enjoy it when it's saying something that, you know, is just creepy and misogynist.
It's not like that kind of thing hasn't always been in all kinds of forms of music. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not something that rap and hip-hop invented.
No, but
not,
I thought it was a nice example of things turning back around, because we have both been talking about how just in all sorts of aspects, like in fashion and in what women are expected to do for their work or not do for work and not do in their lives, that stuff just seems to be sort of pulling back again some of the freedoms that we were working for and speaking up about.
And the range of politics that we address are too broad for some audiences.
It's not the feminine province either.
Exactly. It's very weird. So we just like to broaden the scope of what we're allowed to.
Where does that take us musically?
I know where that takes us musically. I would really recommend popping in our new CD, One Time's Millionaire's Change, and there's a song on there that we wrote for an organization of refugee women. They're based in Atlanta, called the Refugee and Immigrant Women's Network. What they do is leadership training for these women who've come from countries all around the world, and they've come here to the United States because of conditions in their country, war or political strife. And here they are, and they've escaped these awful things, and they come here and they learn to be leaders. And they're just really powerful, encouraging and inspiring women.
I'm a creator. I'm a leader. I'm a visionary.
Hear my voice. Women in search of safety. Children in need of food. Struggling for our freedom, so I am a refugee. Women of hope and courage, living through poverty, fleeing from war and terror, so I am a refugee. Powerful and resilient, seeing my people through, sharing my truth and wisdom, so I am a refugee. Women of strength and beauty, driven by faith and heart, moving our people forward, no longer a refugee. I am a builder, I am a seeker, I am a dreamer, and I am a refugee.
And now that we've heard that song, who wrote it?
Well, I started it, and Sandy and I finished it up. One of the women, the director of the organization at the time, had asked me to write a song for the organization, and sometimes I can do things on demand like that. Sometimes the pieces don't fall together, and in this case, we were closing in on time to go to an annual gathering that they had, and I was watching VH1 at somebody's house, and I fell asleep in the middle of a video. I think it was Madonna or something, dancing across the stage. And I woke up with the song, almost entirely written. I just went and wrote it all down. And it's a song where I don't play guitar. And I have to attribute that to probably watching Madonna, who doesn't generally play guitar in our videos. And it's a very percussion-based song. So I actually usually perform it with a dumbek, which is not my first instrument, but it was a good challenge. A dumbek, Middle Eastern drum.
Okay.
It was a good challenge to have a whole new musical genre come by way of the song. It was interesting.
Yeah, and some of the songs that we write together kind of happen that way. One person gets the start on it, and the other can have an arrangement idea or sort of keep it going, you know, lyrically or musically. And we've been feeling very lucky because it's been working nicely for us to write together.
And, you know, in this song, there are so many categories of people, of workers, women, whatever, that just sort of hang below the surface of the media and remain fairly invisible. And the issues that these women face on a daily basis, some of them separated from their families for years, and just the conditions that they lived under in refugee camps, and then what they go through, just getting through immigration and then starting over in the U.S., their stories just don't get told. So the theme really runs through the song is just hear my voice. And these women are from all these different places, and they are, you know, all these remarkable, powerful things, and I just wanted their voices to be heard.
Yeah, and just when we were doing that aspect of the recording, having these women, I called them on the phone, and that's how we recorded their voices over the phone to put in the song. And it was an empowering experience to talk with them. I'd say, well, what do you do? You know, what do you do in your job? What do you do in your life? And then to categorize it with, I am a something. I'm a creator, or I'm a visionary, like they say. They were like, oh, yeah, I am. You know, it was just nice for them to sort of take stock of what they do, who they are, and be able to declare it.
So some of the actual women that we worked with in this organization's voice are the voices that you hear at the beginning and
throughout the song.
Sprinkled throughout the song.
I was interested in another element, and that is we live in a virulently homophobic, we live in a virulently racist country, and your music has the significance for me in being repelled by that, by speaking out against that and directing, not only speaking out, it's not a criticism, it's much more kind of in your face, uplifting of what is meaningful about proclaiming one's identity and sense of who one is and living that life unencumbered by prejudice. And that's one of the things that I find very muscular in the music that you do.
Because we do live in a culture that, or, you know, in a country that at least gives lip service to a certain amount of freedom of speech and whatnot, I really feel like if we don't exercise that and put those kinds of demands on the culture, put those kinds of demands on the words that people speak, then they don't exist. If we don't stand up and demand that there be a place for those of us who have the power to do that, there are people who are struggling with a different set of challenges than I have. And I have a certain amount of ability. For one, I can make my living at music. I work really hard at it, and it's certainly not the easiest way to make a living. If we don't stand up for those kinds of issues, they won't get addressed, they won't get heard, they won't get put out front. I just feel really strongly that if we don't carve out the place for lesbian and gay and bi and trans people, for people of color, for women, for undocumented workers, for refugees, for all kinds of people, then there will not be a place, and that it is everybody's responsibility.
You mentioned undocumented workers, and you were talking about your work, but the songs that I've heard that you've done dealing with workers, it seems as if there are workers there. I mean, I can feel the presence of the people, and I don't always feel that with other people's work.
We, again, just sort of as a way of taking seriously what we do, try to develop relationships with the people that we're talking about. It's, I think, difficult to speak in any sort of genuine way unless there's some kind of relationship that we've developed between ourselves and people who are doing things that we didn't grow up doing necessarily. And we have a certain amount of our own experience to put toward these songs, but if it's not directly from our experience, we like to know that we have some amount of sanction, I guess, from of the people that we're speaking about to address some of those issues. And with it, I have a song about migrant workers on my Hands recording, and there's an organization in Poughkeepsie called the Rural and Migrant Ministry that organizes migrant labor and seasonal workers in New York State. And I know people within that community, and I've worked with people within that community, and I've gone to Albany to advocate with them and for them and set in on meetings to get some of those issues out front. So, you know, I could run things by them and say, does this sound right?
Mm. Could we hear it?
Sure.
Okay.
This is called A Cold Cup of Water. And at the time when I wrote this song, there was a campaign. This was 1996. A campaign called A Cup of Cold Water, and these organizations were all headed to Albany to address the issues of rural and migrant workers, and they were not subject to the minimum wage laws because they're a whole category, like domestics, of workers that were left out of the labor legislation that protects all other workers. They were the bone that was thrown to the opposition so that those laws could get passed when they were, but so now state by state, including New York State, they have to address each of these things individually. So at the time, they were not subject to minimum wage laws. There were no standards for their housing. They got no days off. The growers were not even required to provide bathroom facilities where these folks worked. One of the most appalling of all was that they were not required to provide drinking water. That just stuck with me until I wrote this. Acres and acres of rope on rope scratched in the face of the land, holding the hopes of the seeds we've sown deep in the cracks of my hands. We come from places our children can't grow, some of us south of the border, seeking safety and wages and work, dignity, food and water. From harm may we be delivered, demand though we may be fired, to meet and bargain together for all workers, clean and safe shelter, and a cold cup of water. Ah, and a cold cup of water. Ah, the dust stings my eyes, my fingers will blister from poisonous water and air. If I speak up, the cruel boss insists there's hundreds to take my place here. From spring to the fall, we all make the rounds, from bunkhouse, orchard, and field. In 49 years, I'll be under this ground, waiting for next season's yield. From harm may we be delivered, demand though we may be fired, to meet and bargain together for all workers, clean and safe shelter, and a cold cup of water. Trusted the grower's promise of work, live months away from my home. Now I yield little more than blisters and dirt, and the weariness in me is growing. If you think you owe my family no debt, let the fruit spoil all the bough. $3 billion of my toil and sweat are feeding your empire now. From harm may we be delivered, demand though we may be fired, to meet and bargain together for all workers, clean and safe shelter, and a cold cup of water.
The
beauty of the song is enticing, and it also makes me enormously angry.
Yeah.
Sandy, I noticed that you responded particularly and added the component when we were talking about bigotry and discrimination of the undocumented,
right.
of immigrant workers, when there's such virulent abuse of people of African ancestry has been habitual, but people now of the Muslim faith. I was wondering why in particular that seemed to strike a chord.
Well, I was kind of combining that piece with what Pat was saying about some of the songs we do that we... And Ken was saying that he felt the workers in the songs. There's a song that we wrote after we heard these undocumented workers speaking shortly after September 11th. They're from a New York City group called Tepeyac. And they were talking about their members of their community who were gone. And at that point, it was very soon after. At that point, they didn't know where people were, if they were alive. But also that they, in the undocumented community, they were not free to come to the pier and register their undocumented lost family member because papers were being seized. And we found out later that...
That was post-911.
Yeah, that the INS at that time, they were called, was seizing papers of undocumented people who came to find out was their family member there. They couldn't find them, and would they get any assistance? So we wrote this song back then, right after September 11th, and just this past September 11th, it was sung at a memorial organized by a group. They're part of HERE, the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Employees Union. They specifically grew out of that group of undocumented workers. And so we felt just so honored that they heard the song and they wanted it sung at their event, an event of undocumented.
Oh, we've got to hear it.
Was that Rock New York?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Right. And just that kind of thing, sort of how tangible what we do can feel. We're not just writing it for ourselves. It ends up going directly back to that community.
What song is that, Sandy?
That's If I Give Your Name. That's on there. Do you want to sing that?
Sure.
Okay.
Mi esposa, my wife, worked on the 80th floor. The company had hired illegals before. She got the job by word of mouth. That's the way in the north when you're from the south. They say 3,000, but the counting's not done. Mi esposa está muerta. 1001. I have no papers, I have no rights. All my days and sleepless nights, missing you silently. If I give your name, will they come after me? Saw the photos in Union Square, but I could not leave this picture there. See 3,000, but that's not true. Mi hermano no volverá. 3,002. I have no papers, I have no rights.
Can't be, perdí a mi hija, 3,003.
2004. I have no papers, I have no rights. All my days have sleepless nights, missing you silently. If I give your
powerful. I can certainly understand why they use this song.
Beautiful and powerful and tragic at the same time. It's lovely voices.
But, you know, this reminds me, there's a good note in Rock New York, actually, working with a number of legal organizations, just announced that it got hundreds of thousands of dollars of back wages for some of the more odious restaurateurs that it has long picketed, etc. So
Smith and Walensky, two restaurants on the Upper East Side.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Folks, man,
they were fighters.
Pouring out the windows there.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's yeah, great. This really so does tell that. The story, since too many of the people who had been involved in Windows on the World at the World Trade Center, that song so vibrantly brought back the reality of their lives and their loss.
This is just one little peek into that world, that the whole one of the big problems is that their stories just don't get told, because as long as they stay kind of invisible, then the undocumented worker can continue to be abused. That's the whole point.
We're at the vantage point of seeing that there are, and we often say this at our show, there are like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people across this country who are pissed off, who are working on the same things that we're all thinking about here. And it's heartening, whether it gets shown in the major media or not, you know, in the mainstream media. It's great, and we try and spread the word about that so people can feel encouraged the way we do when we get to see it.
And when you're not in the neighborhood so people can go see you, you have a new website, don't you?
We do.
Yeah.
It's emmasrevolution.com. And you can see where we're going to be.
Oh, are you going to be surveiled?
Yeah.
Well, it's not like I wasn't already. Come on.
Been in
you know?
Forever since 1919.
So
if they don't already
if
know.
If they can find it, you can find it.
Then they're stupider than I think they
are. Well, let's make sure we can find it. Tell us more about the website and how we can get all the wonderful music that you produce.
Yeah, it's on our website, emmasrevolution.com. And we have information about where we're going to be next. We have information about how you can bring us to your community to share the music with your community. And we have our CDs up there, and we have our peace t-shirts up there, which came out of a song that Pat wrote right after September 11th. And the shirts say, peace, salam and shalom. Salam in Arabic and shalom in Hebrew, written in those languages. And those shirts have sort of taken on a life of their own. We'll sometimes see people wearing them who don't know we're associated with them. It's kind of a wonderful thing.
I was barraged in the best sense. At least the last three demonstrations with peace, salam, shalom. It really has become almost an anthem of any peace demonstration that I have gone to since we have invaded Iraq. That must be great fun to walk down as a protester and hear people singing. That's our song. That's our song. It's taken on a material life. It's caught hold with the masses.
That's the
and
whole
it really
purpose
has.
Of it, really. Exactly. I mean, like Pat was saying before, we write these kind of things because there's something that's affected us, and our response is to write a song or to come up with something to sing to sort of get that emotion rolling. And then the fact that it works to keep people together or to inspire them while they're marching along, that's the goal.
It's great. It's a great compliment to that people use your tools out in the world. You know, I want to see them out there as tools. And so it's very gratifying that they are useful to other people as well.
I think maybe we should play this one.
Well, what if you think? Insist.
Yeah, I was hoping you would, because I'm the only one in this room who has not heard that song.
Oh, so. You better do that.
Well, I think they were doing, you were going to do a different one.
But that's okay. We can
well,
do,
we
both.
No, do both of them.
You want to do.
Yeah, no.
Do both.
Yeah, well, we should do this.
It, actually,
goodness,
you have heard it. The minute you hear it, I'll bet you'll
yeah, you'll go, oh,
it.
Yeah. Okay. Luckily, it's a simple song that people can pick up on, and that was the sort of the whole point. We knew we would be singing it for lots and lots of folks. So your part is... Peace, salam, shalom. 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 We believe in peace. We believe in peace. We believe in peace. We believe in peace. We will work for peace. We will work for peace. We will work for peace.
Salam, shalom.
We will work for peace.
Salam, shalom.
We will work for peace. Jerusalem. Ramallah. In Tel Aviv. In Washington.
Salam, shalom.
In Rafah.
I think the only difference, Ken, is I've heard it sung so many times.
No, I've heard that.
Not,
yeah,
right?
Good, yeah.
Right.
I didn't know I had heard
it
that, but
didn't sound
that.
Always that good. Although it certainly was always effervescent.
We can't be responsible for others.
Sandy, which is the song you were thinking about as a kind of companion?
I was thinking about this song that's a fairly new one that Pat wrote.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And it's just that same kind of thing, like, I don't know that people will sing it marching down the street. But
well, they will after they hear this show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they definitely
millions
enjoy
will.
Singing it when we're at our shows.
Actually, I should give a shout-out to his, because his family lives around here. I was talking to Steve Kagan, a great friend of ours who lives in Cleveland. He was an organizer with Jobs with Justice for a long time. And
we're not programming any of these labor references in here. We just have people who are sensitive to the cause of the working class.
Well, it's part of the movement. As you're talking about all aspects of the movement. And yeah. It's great, building bridges.
Mm. Exactly.
We don't even have to.
We're
tell
not
you
promotional
that.
At all.
Not at all. So a shout out to Leslie and Jesse Kagan. That's Jesse's son, a dear friend. And we were talking, and he said, "Yeah, you know, every now and then somebody says, oh, you're just preaching to the choir." And, you know, I always maintain, who is the choir? You know, who are they really? There are lots of people that know about these issues, know full well the impact of these issues, and they're not doing anything about it. And then we looked at one another, had this mischievous look on his face, and I said, what if we could motivate the choir? So that...
Well, you've got two of them here.
Quite motivated, too, I see. This is our response.
Has anybody seen the choir? I want to preach to the converted. I want to see them rising up. Don't want to see one gaze averted. Don't want to have to prove a point. Just want to know they're on my side. Just want to smile and inspire. Has anybody seen the choir? Has anybody seen the church? Maybe that's where I can find them. standing tall against the fray. Strength and unity behind them. Have they gathered at the river? Are they washed upon the shore? Have they set the world on fire? Has anybody seen the choir? Has anybody seen the choir? I want to preach to the converted. I want to see them rising up. Don't want to see one gaze averted. Don't want to have to prove a point. Just want to know they're on my side. Just want to smile and inspire. Has anybody seen the choir? Are they teaching in the schools? Are they drinking in the bars? Are they making all the rules? Are they fighting in the wars? All I want to do is get a glimpse of who they are. Has anybody ever seen the choir? Though we may never reach consensus, hope is still within our reach. We can learn to move together, put some motion in our speech. We are a mighty congregation with strength beyond our means. We have the passion and desire. Has anybody seen the choir? Has anybody seen the choir? I want to preach to the converted. I want to see them rising up. Don't want to see one gaze averted. Don't want to have to prove a point. Just want to know they're on my side. Just want to smile and inspire. Has anybody seen the choir? Has anybody seen the choir? I want to preach to the converted. I want to see them rising up. Don't want to see one gaze averted. Don't want to have to prove a point. Just want to know they're on my side. Just want to smile and inspire. Has anybody seen the choir? Just want to smile and inspire. Has anybody seen the choir?
Well, to paraphrase Emma Goldman, if I can't smile, I don't want your revolution.
It's so nice to have somebody say, hey, yeah, us, yeah, I'm the choir, it's okay.
We should get WBAI to adopt
that. We won't talk about this, the line about consensus, particularly after our union meeting the other night, but wow. It was great. It made me think of the 55 million people who voted against Mr. Bush.
And all the people whose votes were not counted.
Indeed. Unfortunately, we are drawing to a close. Well, we want to give you both, Sandy O, Pat Humphreys, the opportunity to take us out verbally and in terms of your music with what you think you would like our listeners, your comrades, your choir. To know, to think about.
I still feel like the big thing is to know that there are so many people out there who are feeling like what we're feeling and thinking about it. And I would just be heartened by that and just know and seek it out wherever you can on radio stations like BAI and on the internet and keep up the struggle.
Thank you so much for being the voice that you are, you know, the voice for justice and the voice of those who don't have as much opportunity to speak up. And we so appreciate independent media, and we really urge people to continue to support independent media. It's vital to us, and I know that it's vital to numerous other people. And, you know, I do believe that even people that do not see themselves really as activists in any sense, once they're presented with the issues, will make the right decisions about them. It's just a matter of getting the information to them. So, you know, we work hard at doing that, and we could not do that without the efforts of people like you. So thank you so much.
You're too gracious, but we really are one. We are a mighty community, even without consensus sometimes, or sometimes a raucous consensus being arrived at, but we are one certainly striking a chord, no puns intended, to ferret out the racism and the homophobic responses and the sexism and ageism and
classism.
All that. Absolutely. And so we're going to impose just a little bit more and ask, what do you think we should go out with?
You want to do that?
I wrote this song when the leaders of North and South Korea came together, and it just seemed that it was such a moment of hope. You know, I know that a lot went into that, and a lot has happened since. And, you know, there are many issues, not the least of which is nuclear weapons. But I'm sad that North Korea didn't sign the non-proliferation treaty, but I'm sadder that the U.S. didn't and hasn't been willing to get rid of their stockpiles. We were contacted by a group, and they were working on reunifying the Korean Peninsula, and they contacted us because we did peace songs. When they mentioned that they were working on, you know, sort of breaking down that demilitarized zone and those walls between those families, we sent them this song, and they made it the theme of this cultural event that they did in Washington, D.C., and we went and sang it there, and they said, can you come with us to Korea? We were so ambitious, we wanted to translate the whole song into Korean and sing it in English and Korean, but the only part that we could really catch in the short bit of time, we had only about 2 weeks to prepare, was that the recurring theme throughout the song is We Are One, and in Korean, it's 우리는 하나, so... Smiling face, outstretched hand, through disputes, small and grand, we will lay down our guns, we are one. In the rage, through the in our grief, when it's done, 우리는 하나, 우리는 하나. Sand. When each day has begun, we are one. When the rock wears away and the tide rolls and sways by the sun, 우리는 하나, 우리는 하나. Where the earth touches sky, we are born, we all die. Where the clear waters run, 우리는 하나. In our hearts, in the drum, we are one. In the birth of a child, through the field,
daughters and sons,
our sons,
Urin and Hana,
Urin and Hana,
Urin and Hana.
Humphreys.
Beautiful.
Sandy O, thank you for gracing us with your presence and for building bridges with us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.